Another grave. Read. Salie emerged from the trees clad in fitted pants and knee-high leather boots. She'd tucked a billowing shirt into them. Jean-Luc's shirt. I recognized the stitching on the collar, the sleeves. Deep blue, chasseur blue, and gold. On her head, she wore a feathered cavalier hat. On her face, she wore a neatly trimmed beard. Beau burst into laughter. What? Hastily, she looked down at herself, smoothing her shirt, checking her hair, tucking an errant strand into her hat. Is it not convincing?
Oh, it's convincing, he assured her. You look like an idiot.
Beside me, Nicolina giggled from her spot on the ground. We'd bound her wrists again, coating her entire hands in Coco's blood. Now she couldn't move a finger if she tried. Startled, perhaps even scandalized by Beau's bald honesty, Celie's brows shot up. Cosette often wears trousers.
But not a beard, Beau said. You don't need a disguise, Celie. Your face isn't on those wanted posters.
Well, I just thought I might...
Her face flamed.
Perhaps I'm not wanted by the crown, but my father will eventually search for me. Jean-Luc has spies throughout the kingdom. Should I not take precautions?
At our impassive stares, she lifted her chin defiantly and repeated,
Cosette and Louise wear trousers.
Beau spread his hands with a smirk.
And there it is.
Her eyes narrowed.
Your Majesty, please take no offense, but you were a good deal less pleasant than I would have liked to believe.
Still chuckling, he slung an arm over Coco's shoulder.
None taken, I assure you.
Coco pushed him away. He gets that a lot. Crooking his finger at Celie, Beau led her into the first village. We decided the two of them would search for black pearls. Though not ideal, Coco and I needed to remain with Nicolina. We couldn't easily drag her through the streets with bound and bloody hands. I shuddered to think of her actually speaking if we did find someone who sold them. By the third village, I'd heard enough of her to last a lifetime. She reclined atop a rock on the edge of the forest now, moaning and tugging against her rope. Her hands hung limp and useless from her wrists like bloody carcasses.
We're hungry. Shall we venture into just one hamlet? Just one to have some fun? She cast me a wicked glance. Just one to find a sticky bun.
I looked away from her blistered hands.
Couldn't bear the sight of them. Shut your mouth, Nicolina.
Coco lazed within the roots of a knotted tree while we waited. She picked at the fresh cut on her palm.
She won't stop until you do.
Ooh, clever mouse.
Nicolina sat up abruptly, leering at me.
We don't just live beneath her skin. No, we live beneath yours. It's warm, and it's wet, and filled with short, angry breaths.
I swear to God, if you don't stop talking,
you'll do what?
With a cackle, she pulled at her ropes again. I pulled back. She nearly toppled from the rock.
Will you harm this pretty skin? Will you strike this freckled flesh? Will you punish us? Oh, husband, with a good, hard thrash.
Ignore her, Coco said. Heat suffused my face, my neck. My hands clenched the rope. I could ignore her. I could do it. She wanted a reaction. I would give her none. Another handful of minutes passed in silence. Then,
we need to relieve ourselves, Nicolina pronounced.
I scowled and shook my head.
No.
Perhaps in the trees,
she continued, as if I hadn't spoken.
Perhaps they deserve it? Naughty, naughty trees. Perhaps they'll observe it?
Rising to her feet, she cackled at her own perverse joke. I tugged her rope irritably.
I said no.
No?
Disbelief, still feigned, still disingenuous, as if she'd somehow expected my response, laced her voice. Lou's voice. The sound of it made me ache and rage in equal measure.
You'd have us
pissed on our leg. Your own wife.
You aren't my wife.
A sick wave of regret washed through me at the familiar words, at the memory. The ring I'd once given Lou, golden band and mother of pearl stone, weighed heavy in my pocket. Like a brick, I'd kept it with me since Leviathan, anxious to return it to her, to slide it back on her finger where it belonged. I would do just that at Lo Melancolique. I would marry her right there on the beach. Just like last time, except proper now. Real. Nicolina gave a feline grin.
No, we aren't your wife, are we? Which makes us your... What, exactly?
A pause. She leaned closer, brushing her nose against mine. I jerked back.
She fought, you know.
She breathed, still grinning. My entire body went still, my entire being.
She screamed your name. You should have heard her in those last moments. Absolutely terrified. Absolutely delicious. We savored her death.
It wasn't true. Lou was still in there. We would free her.
She can't hear you, pet.
Michelina pursed her lips in a sugar-sweet display of sympathy, and I realized I'd spoken the words aloud.
The dead don't have ears. She won't hear your cries, and she won't see your tears.
That's enough,
Coco said sharply. Though I could see her trying to tug the rope from me, I couldn't feel the movement. My fist remained locked. Blood roared in my ears.
Shut the hell up, Nicolina.
She fought, you know. Nicolina giggled like a little girl, shrugged.
All right.
She screamed your name. I took a deep breath. In through my nose, out through my mouth, one after another, again and again.
You should have heard her in those last moments, absolutely terrified.
I should have been there.
It's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. Bo and Celie arrived at that moment, and Coco succeeded in tugging the rope from me. Glowering at their empty hands, she snapped, "Nothing? Again?" Celie shrugged helplessly, while Bo lifted said hands in a lackadaisical gesture.
What would you like us to do, Cosette? Shit the pearls into existence? We aren't oysters.
Her nostrils flared.
Oysters don't shit out pearls, you idiotic piece of
shit,
Nicolina supplied helpfully. Coco closed her eyes then, forcing a deep breath before looking up at the sky. Though smoke still obscured the sun, it must have been late afternoon. The next village is about 2 hours up the road. It's the last one before Lo Melancolique. Her expression hardened, and she met my gaze. Jaw still clenched, I nodded once. Reed and I will search it, too.
What?
Bo looked between the two of us incredulously.
Celie and I are perfectly capable.
I am sure that's true, she snapped. But this isn't the time for a pissing contest. We need to find those pearls. This is our last chance.
But, Celie leaned forward, blinking rapidly. But, Nicolina.
Coco lifted her fist. She'd wrapped the rope around it. The movement forced Nicolina closer, and Coco stared directly into her eyes. Every word promised violence.
Nicolina will behave herself. Nicolina doesn't want to die. And she's wearing the face of the most notorious witch in Belterra.
She tugged her closer. Nicolina had stopped grinning.
If she causes a scene, if she steps one toe out of line, they'll lash her to a stake right there in Anchois. Nicolina understands that, doesn't she?
Nicolina sneered.
You won't let us burn?
We might not be able to save you. Nicolina glowered now, but said nothing. Though I reached for her rope once more, Coco shook her head and started forward. She stays with me, she said over her shoulder. You can't bring yourself to kick her ass, but I can. It's what Lu would want. Anshua boasted 3 dirt-packed streets. One of these led to the dock, where dozens of fishing boats bobbed along black water. One housed the villagers' ramshackle dwellings. Carts and fish stands littered the market of the third. Though the sun had fully set, firelight danced on merchants' faces as they hawked wares. Shoppers slipped arm in arm between them, calling to friends, to family. Some clutched brown paper packages, others wore seashell necklaces. Bits of agate sparkled in the hair of impish children. Gnarled fishermen gathered at the beach to sip ale in groups of 2s and 3s, grousing about their wives, their grandchildren, their knees. Coco peered down the market street, trying to see through the gaps in the crowd. She'd tied one of Nicolina's hands to hers. The sleeves of their cloaks hid all blisters, all blood. We should split up. We'll cover more ground that way. I tugged Celie away from a cart of scrying stones.
Fine. You two go to the dock, ask if anyone has heard of black pearls in the area. We'll search the market.
A gleam of wonder entered Celie's eyes as she watched a young man pull a roughly hewn flute from his pocket to serenade another. Some maidens nearby giggled. One even stepped apart from the rest, brave enough to dance. Celine nodded eagerly. Yes, let us do that.
Coco eyed us, skeptical. Is this what you've been doing, Celine?
Beau scoffed and shook his head, mutinous. I gripped Celine's elbow with pointed assurance.
If they're here, we'll find them.
Though Coco still seemed doubtful, she relented with a nod, fidgeting with the locket at her throat, readjusting her hood.
Fine.
But you'd better search the market, not stroll down memory lane. She jabbed a finger at my nose. And be in plain sight when we get back. I want to see hands. Jerking her chin toward Beau and Nicolina, she left Celie and me standing alone, in humiliated silence. Heat pricked my ears. Her cheeks burned tomato red.
Thanks, Cosette,
I muttered bitterly. Forcing my jaws to unclench, I took a deep breath, adjusted my own cavalier, and guided Celie into the street. When the merchant rattled his scrying stones in our direction, he'd carved them from fish bones, I kept walking.
Don't listen to her. She's going through a lot.
Celie refused to meet my gaze. I don't think she likes me.
She doesn't like anyone but Lu.
Ah. For a split second, resentment flashed across her doll-like features. But then she smoothed her face into a polite smile, squaring her shoulders, straightening her spine, always the lady.
Perhaps you're right.
Her smile turned genuine as she spotted a shabby confiserie.
Read, look.
She pointed to the tins of almond candy in the window, Calisson.
It's your favorite. We simply must purchase some.
With a pat to her leather satchel, I'd slung it over my shoulder, where it jostled against my own, she tried to steer me toward the confiserie's pink door.
I didn't move. We're here for black pearls, not candy.
Still, she tugged on my wrists.
It'll take 2 minutes.
No, Celie.
As if Coco's reprimand had struck the ground between us like a bolt of lightning, she dropped my hands. Pink returned to her cheeks.
Very well. Lead the way.
We made it all of 2 minutes before she stopped again. Anger forgotten, she peered ahead at a group of men huddled around a barrel, eyes wide and childlike, curious. She asked,
"What are they doing?"
I glanced over their shoulders as we passed. A handful of dirty bronze corons littered the top of the barrel, a pair of wooden dice.
Gambling.
Oh,
she craned her neck to see too. When one of the men winked at her, motioning her closer, I rolled my eyes. Some disguise. She tapped her satchel again, oblivious.
I should like to try gambling, I think. Please hand over my bag.
I snorted and kept walking.
Absolutely not.
She made an indignant noise at the back of her throat.
I beg your pardon.
Though I'd barely met Violette and Victoire, I imagined this was how an elder brother felt. Exasperated, impatient. Fond?
Read.
I ignored her.
Read!
She actually stamped her foot now. When I still didn't turn, didn't acknowledge her inane request, she seemed to snap, tearing after me and latching onto the bag with both hands, hissing like a cat. Her nails even scored the leather.
You will release my bag this instant. This is my bag. You cannot control it, and you cannot control me. If I wish to gamble, I shall gamble, and you shall.
Finally, I swung around, and she swung with me. My hand shot out to steady her when she stumbled backward. She swiped it away with an unladylike snarl.
Give me my bag.
Fine. Here.
I tossed the satchel to her. But it slipped from her fingers. Coins and jewelry alike spilled across the snow. Cursing, I knelt to block the gambler's view with my shoulders.
But you promised to help us. We need your Quran to buy the pearls.
Oh, I'm well aware you need my help.
Angry tears sparkled in her eyes as she too knelt, returning fistfuls of treasure to her bag.
Perhaps you are the one in need of a reminder.
I glared pointedly at interested passersby. My hands swiftly joined hers, and though she tried to swap me away, I straightened abruptly, my fingers curling around familiar glass, cylindrical glass, cold glass. Her nails cut into my knuckles as I moved to withdraw it.
Wait, she cried.
Too late. I stared at the syringe in my palm.
What is this?
But I knew what it was. We both did. She stood perfectly still now, her hands knotted together at her waist. She didn't blink, didn't breathe. I didn't blame her. If she moved, her tearful facade might shatter, and the truth might spill forth.
Where did you get it?
I asked, voice hard.
Jean gave it to me,
she whispered. Hesitating briefly.
When I told him I was leaving.
When you told him you were coming to find us.
She didn't contradict me.
Yes.
My gaze snapped to her face.
Were you going to use it?
What?
Her voice cracked on the word, and she clutched my forearm, oblivious to Coco's and Beau's heads bobbing through the crowd. They hadn't yet spotted us.
Reed, I would never.
You're still crying.
She wiped her face hastily.
You know I cry when I'm upset.
Why are you upset, silly? Did you think you'd lost it?
My fingers closed around the glass. The hemlock injection didn't warm, however. Devil's flower, the priests had called it. It had grown on the hillside of Jesus' crucifixion. When his blood had touched the petals, they'd turned poisonous.
It shouldn't matter if you had. You weren't going to use it.
Reed.
Her hand on my arm crept downward. Even now, she ached to have it in her possession.
It was just a precaution. I never planned to use it on you or anyone else. You must believe me.
I do believe you.
And I did. I believe she'd never planned to use it. If our reunion had gone wrong, however, she wouldn't have hesitated. The fact that she'd brought it here, that she'd hidden it, meant she'd been prepared to hurt us. I tucked the syringe in my pocket.
You know this is poison, right? Standard issue. Which or no, it'd incapacitate you much faster than it would me.
It'd take down Jean-Luc, King Auguste, all of them.
She blinked in confusion, confirming my suspicions. She'd thought it a weapon unique against witches. I shook my head.
Fuck, silly. Are you really that afraid of us? Of me?
She flinched at the profanity, color rising high on her cheeks, but not in embarrassment, in anger. When she lifted her chin, her voice didn't waver.
Is that even a question? Of course I fear you. A witch murdered Philippa. A witch locked me in a coffin with her remains. When I close my eyes, I can still feel her flesh on my skin, Reed. I can still smell her, my sister. Now I'm terrified of the dark, of sleep, of dreams, and even awake. I can hardly breathe. I'm trapped in a nightmare without end.
My own anger withered to something small, something shameful.
So, yes,
she continued fiercely, fresh tears spilling down her cheeks.
I packed a weapon against witches. I hid it from you. How could I do otherwise? Whether or not I like it, you're a witch now. You're one of them. I'm trying truly. I am. But you cannot ask me not to protect myself.
She took a deep, steadying breath then, and met my gaze.
Truthfully, you cannot ask me anything. I won't live in another grave, Reed. You've moved on. It is time for me to do the same.
Though 100 words of comfort rose to my lips, I didn't utter one. They weren't enough for what she'd suffered. No words would ever be enough. I handed her the syringe instead. She seized it instantly, lifting it to her eyes with a truly terrifying expression. Not like Lou, not like Coco, not like Gabrielle or Violette or Victoire. Like Celie.
When I next see Morgane, I will stab this needle in her heart,
she promised. And I believed her.